Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stuart Thompson. I'm a little late, but I'm here. Tonight, beside me, I have Nicola. Welcome, Nicola.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Awesome. So happy you're here today. And today we're going to be talking about sexuality, a kind of a continuation of what I did last time. I did this and I talked about sexuality from a male perspective. I was supposed to have a guest, but unfortunately, the gentleman I had asked to come in, Nathan, and he was a guest previous to my last podcast, couldn't make it in. So another time, and we'll get him back in again because he's quite keen and loves just coming out here and talking about his recovery, his growth, and his experiences. But tonight, folks, we're talking about sexuality, it's part two, and rather than hearing from just two men, I thought, well, no better way to finish this off from with a woman's perspective. But first, I need to tell you a few things before we get started. One, I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm not a therapist or a doctor or anything of the sort. I'm only here offering my experiences of my healing journey from my experiences from childhood sexual abuse. That is all. I do volunteer at the Gatehouse. I've been there since 2011. I went there to go heal and recover, and I just stayed on ever since then. And I work from a peer support model, and that's what I've been doing all this time. That's how I was healed, and then I end up doing the exact same thing. And Nicola, I guess you can relate in some ways too, can't you?
I most definitely can, yeah.
Mm. So, folks, that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. I just gave you my disclaimer as well, and also should mention too as well, I'm kind of looking forward to as well, because tomorrow we get to go back to Humber College tomorrow.
We do, talking in Peter Dawson's class.
Yes, Professor Peter Dawson's class. In fact, if you go back to some of my podcasts, you will hear Peter on here as well. And tomorrow we will be talking about reconciliation and, well, about forgiveness. And, forgiveness, that's such a hot topic most of the time. And I see this on social media all the time. And that forgiveness, well, right away when we talk about forgiveness, we think about, well, forgiveness towards, our offenders. And no, that's not what it's about. Well, it is to agree, but first off, it's always about us. So it's just a question of what we do after that. We can forgive ourselves first before we can even think about forgiving our offenders. And that's not what I'm suggesting you do or anybody else do, because it's all a person, a place of personal perspective on what feels right for you, whether you do or whether you don't. Whether anybody else agrees with you or disagrees with you is really none of their concern, because it's about you to begin with. So keeping that in mind as well, if someone chooses to do so, that's their decision, and that's the way it should be, because you come to think about it, we're the ones carrying the grief. So, and that's what's important.
Absolutely. So for each individual survivor, victor, whatever you want to call yourself, it really is what forgiveness means to that individual person, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And when we talk about reconciliation, well, reconciliation could be many different things. I shouldn't say many different things, but a few different things, I should say. And one of them, you could incorporate justice into that as well. And that could be taken into a few different directions as well. But we're talking about just plain forgiveness and being able to, do something so you can live with what that person did to you. And, it's a personal journey, and I think I'm just going to leave it at that. And as everybody has their own perspective on that. But another thing I want to talk about too as well, which we have coming up, which is the following weekend, we're doing another partners program.
We are indeed. Looking forward to that too.
And I don't even know how many we've done now, but we've done lots of them. And,
yeah, we have. I've lost count.
And I always look forward to do that. We usually have upwards of, 15 to 20 participants. Just for the day, and it's a day of great reckoning, of understanding from a person supporting you, understanding how your healing process is working, and at the same time, a person who's there supporting you doesn't always understand your ups and downs and the changes you're making and your behaviors, or however they may be, and what we do is we support the non-survivor, so we help them through the process of what the hell's going on with you. You're not the same person anymore. You're different. know, you were different before, but now you're even more different. So how do I deal with that? And or how do I deal with, you know, the other attachments that come along with your being a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, you know, such as your anxieties. And I'll even just leave it at that. You know, and it's just not that simple. But if you have a partner that's there and has stayed with you through your whole process, you know, maybe he or she's been with you for, you know, let's say just an example, you've been together for 15 years or 20 years, that's a long time, and been through all your ups and downs with you and not really ever understanding, but yet staying by your side and supporting you all the way through that. So what I'm getting at by saying this is that we also have a drop-in twice a month for the non-survivor to help them understand. But the day that we have together is really a good day because we help them understand our healing journey at the same time, as messed up as it could be. And, you know, it's fantastic. And you know, fantastic is not even the right choice of word, not even the right word for the person that stays by you. But, you know, they're just as much a warrior and a hero as you are for being able to put up with you. Well, I could speak about myself, but I can't speak about anybody else. But I couldn't imagine anybody staying by my side for all the crap I could have put them through, right?
Absolutely. Mm. The other thing I'd like to mention regarding the partners group as well, even though it says partners, it does actually also incorporate, so if it's like a mother and daughter living together, or, you know, mother and son or whatever, and one of them's not a survivor and one of them is. So it's not just partners as in relationships, it's partners as in, you know, father, son, or whatever, that
yeah.
we invite to do the partners program, because it's about relationships with family, friends, or whatever, people who've even brought friends to support them in that.
Yeah. Gay, straight, bisexual,
yeah.
whatever your sexual orientation is, it doesn't really matter either. There's no discrimination,
yeah.
non-binary, it doesn't matter. It's about supporting you, you know,
mm-hmm.
it does, like I say. So we have no discrimination. Anybody is welcome.
Exactly. Yeah.
And but anyway, looking forward to that.
Yes. And I would just like to say I've just finished another 16-week group where we held a peer support group for co-ed.
Phase two. 16 weeks too.
So 16 weeks. Another one bites the dust. So it was good. First week off. We are complete.
And you had how many participants?
Four completed the whole group.
Yeah.
So we started off with, I think it was eight or nine. Some people have to go off for work commitments or whatever. Or for whatever reason, they may not be ready to
exactly.
finish the group. So, and we're okay with that. When they're ready, they'll come back. So
that's one thing I could say about where we volunteer at is the door is always open. If you choose, for whatever reason, you can't finish the group. And there's never any judgment. The door is always welcome. You can come back and start
mm-hmm.
the next group. And you can do this group as many times as you want, as long as you don't become a pain in the ass. Only kidding.
What you'd like. And then the other thing that's coming up is we're going to LAMP on March 12th.
The 12th, yes. And this is a community support thing now we're doing. Through a student.
Yes, a student at the house who's doing the social work program.
From what college was that again? Do you remember?
I'm not sure. No, I'm not sure. We have so many students. I can't keep up with all of them, to be honest with you. I'm not sure. I know it's just the social work program. It is the social work program.
But we'll validate where she's from. But I
yeah.
think I think it's from Sheridan College. But don't quote me on that.
Yeah.
But anyway, nevertheless, This is going to be the LAMP Community Center. Go ahead, finish your thing as I've cut you off.
I can't remember what I was going to say.
Okay, well, I'll just going to finish.
You interrupted me.
Yes,
so
I did.
I'm
oh.
just kidding.
But anyway, it's going to be the LAMP Community Center, which is in Etobicoke, Toronto, down the lakeshore. Again, I'll post when we're going to do it anyway prior to this podcast a little later on in the future, which is March 12th. Is actually not that far
mm-hmm.
away, but nonetheless, it will be 6 o'clock on a Friday evening. And Thursday evening, I should say. I've got it wrong already, but again, I don't have it posted. But it'll be on a Thursday evening, and from 6 p.m. till probably about it's not going to be very long because we just want to get short and sweet, right to the point. about our programs, and I'm also going to talk about my podcast as well, as I've been asked to do. But that's basically what we're going to be doing, talking about the programs at the Gatehouse.
Exactly, yes.
And putting it out to the community. So the whole community has been invited to come and show up if they wish. And and support will be there anyway if any, we do trigger anybody as well.
Yeah, so basically we're going to be talking about all the programs that we are involved with. So that would be partners, that would be phase one, the phase two. I personally have also helped with the memoir group, the grief workshop. And in the fall this year, I'm really excited because I'm going to be helping with the reconciliation group too. And that's a really nice program. So I'm excited about that. Sorry. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah,
so anyway.
Those are programs where we, that's what we got coming up. So as you can tell, we're very, very busy for employed people too. We keep our hands pretty busy all the time.
Yeah, rather.
But anyway, we're looking forward to it.
Yes.
Tonight, folks, we're talking about sexuality. Last time my podcast actually wasn't last week, but the week before or 2 weeks ago, I talked about sexuality. Now, a lot of the stuff I quoted from was from Callie Monroe, which I've got posted on the link here as well. And she's a psychotherapist out of Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And she caters to many different things in mental health. And sexuality is one of those things. And she's got a great article if you go on there and you can see. And I basically quoted her and then also my own stuff in that show, that podcast I did 2 weeks ago. But I also gave it to you from a male perspective. And originally, as I stated in the beginning of the podcast, that I also had Nathan that was supposed to come on there, which unfortunately he couldn't make it. So I wanted to get it to two different males, but as it worked out, and I'm kind of really happy now that it did, because I've got Nicola here beside me talking about this, and I kind of was in the back of my mind, I think, anyway, that I kind of wanted to do this anyway by having a woman with me talking about their experiences with this too as well, because you need to understand that obviously our sexes are different, but you got to think about it from our head point or our mental point or our physical or sensations, all those things, all our emotions, how we think are obviously different, but how are we different? Like how much more emotional are men than women, as just one example or a question or however you want to take that, but there is a difference, is what I'm getting at. However, I just worded it. But the point being is the differences are so obvious. And yet, I think some men don't always see that. A lot of men don't always see that. And maybe even I can say the same for women as well. But the point of our topic here tonight in sexuality is understanding our is just so you understand that there's huge differences in how we think and how we feel. You know, it's not just about the male ego or you know, how rude of me to put that in there, but reality, sometimes that's part of it, and how we think and how we behave. And yet, women are more emotional. Men can be emotional as well, but this is why I'm really glad I have Nicola here tonight, because from hearing from a woman's perspective, well, I can say these things and read from a book and hear from another woman and tell me, you know, and then I'm telling you secondhand, but it's not the same as hearing it from a woman that's right here, right now. And which to me would be more vital to, well, our experiences that we've gone through from childhood sexual abuse, and not even just that, from sexual abuse period, even from an adult, if you got raped, for example, because a lot of these feelings and concerns we have are going to be very, very similar whether you're a child or whether you're an adult. And, such as getting post-traumatic stress from being raped, right, as an example, as an adult, as you would as a child, and or complex PTSD, depending on severity of how badly you were abused. So it can go many, many different ways, but I think it's really important to hear from a woman's perspective. Like I say, I've got Nicola here tonight. And so when we talk about sexuality, I know you've talked about your brother before, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're kind of going to talk about it tomorrow anyway as well, but how do you think that experience, just starting with your brother, into adulthood. Never mind. You might touch base on your other experiences, but let's just start with that. How did that change you thinking sexually? Even at that age, from a young adult.
Well, I think at the age that I was abused, I wasn't even thinking about sex, to be honest with you. So I don't know if it changed me sexually, because as a, I don't know how exactly how old I was between maybe 9 and 11, because I guess the trauma blanked the age out, I guess. But if I look back around the time what I was doing, I would have been at middle school, and it was between 9 and 11. So at that age, I wasn't even thinking about sex.
Well, that part I get, that I understand. I totally get that. But what about as you became a teenager, a young teenager, and young adult? How did it affect you that way?
How did I manage sex, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Or not.
Well, I think it unnaturally made me feel wrongly that I was just there to be used and abused. That's what a girl was for. That's what it made me feel. So I probably was, because of the trauma, I probably was led into more unhealthy relationships because of that. And probably throughout a big chunk of my life, to be honest with you. So that just really ricocheted down the line until I was in my later 40s, and I thought, F this, I ain't doing it no more. It literally has affected a big chunk of my life. For a good, since about 2011, I was more freer from it. And that's just grown over the last, how long, 9 years?
Mm-hmm.
2010, 2011 was when I got my big sort of, okay, I'm going to tell my parents. But then that also led to more trauma. So the 7 years of disconnect with them was pretty huge. So it's not an easy road, is it?
No.
And I know when I did first start exploring sex when I was in my later teens, I would get flashbacks when I was in that, you know, within the act of sex. So it was handling that, but just kind of working through it until I didn't have those thoughts anymore, I guess.
So when I talk about differences, so can we talk a little bit more about the emotions side of it?
Oh, the emotions. I was numb for years on end. I was completely numb for years on end. I went through my whole, from probably 9, 10, I didn't want to think about what happened, and I was always thinking that I had, you know, if I was vulnerable and I told people what had happened, I would then have this thing written on my forehead as to say, give me more crap. So I don't know, I didn't have the words, I guess, to express what went on, so I didn't obviously tell my parents or anyone about it. And then it was only really when I was pregnant that it came out, because those hormones were so high, it kind of worked its way out. But and I would have been 27 when I was pregnant, so that's when I started to talk about it. But again, I had people around me that were still unsafe. I was still in an unsafe relationship. There was still domestic violence going on. So when I told certain people, it wasn't dealt with in the right way. So then it took me still more years to really deal with it. But my big turnover was when I told my parents, because that, it felt like I know they say the truth sets you free, but it really did. It really did. That was my big jump in my journey. Prior to that, I'd already written to my brother when I just had my son, and wrote that letter to your abuser, like you do, in one of his birthday cards. And sort of told him, I guess, I can't remember all the words exactly, but I guess I told him I didn't want him to be any part of my life or my sons. And if I ever bumped into him, because we lived in the same town at the time, we would just look directly at each other, not say a thing. He'd respect that I didn't want anything to do with him. And that was it. But yeah, that's kind of how it was. But I mean, I've come a long way, because I mean, like you know, the year before now, I had to face him because my dad was dying in hospital, and so I had to face him on my dad's deathbed, essentially. And I just looked at him, and I actually felt sorry for him. And I didn't know how I was going to feel, but I knew that I was going to have to face him again. But I guess I'd already forgiven him. And then when I looked at him, I didn't feel rage. I just felt sorry for him. But he had an air of awkwardness. And so I then wrote him another letter to my abuser, saying, I don't want you to be awkward around me. And he respected that. And there were, obviously, I have to have good boundaries. There were some respectful, brief conversations. And I'll give him his due. He was respectful around my dad's death. So, you know what? I do forgive him. But there's obviously got to be good boundaries in having some kind of relationship. But it's nothing like my healthy brother. I mean, as you know, I have a really good relationship with my healthy brother. With my abuser, or one of them. it's nothing like that. It's just very occasionally now and then we might connect through one of the social networking sites, and that's pretty much it. But yeah, it's a work in progress. It's not easy. And still, there are reconciliation issues with the extended family. As you know, my sister, one of my elder sisters, she still will not speak to me. She still will not have a connection. And again, I've written her a letter. I wrote her a decent letter. After my dad died, like in a card, trying to give her my best wishes and being really decent. And then I wrote her another 9-page letter at Christmas and haven't heard a dicky bird. But you know what? It is what it is, and I'm okay with it. It's not my shit, it's hers. So you know what? If she wants to be that way, that's her energy, because it certainly ain't mine.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to let be what is, and you know, it is what it is.
How to trust.
Trust as in sexuality and
mm-hmm.
relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I'm there now, but still sometimes things do come up. But you know what? I just have to work through them. I am what I am. So I can't change my path, but I can only work on getting myself to a better understanding of myself, a better understanding of my partner, and everything else.
No, when we talk about trust, what's part of the trust?
So part of the trust is in sexuality?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't have any issues with that. So you mean as in intimacy?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't have any issues with that at all.
No, but before.
Before?
Yes, I'm talking about before. But what did you struggle with?
Oh, well, I mean, I was in a relationship.
See, this is important. Because
I was in a relationship for 30 years, which, as you know, was very unsafe. And I the coercive control was horrendous, because if I refused, you'd take it to heart and go fucking ballistic. So, excuse my French, but that's the truth. So the coercive control was still abuse as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah, it is what it is, right? But trust, no, I didn't trust him. I didn't trust him at all. Well, who would? I mean, you know, love is not control, is it? So, you know what? He is what he is. I'm just glad I ain't there no more.
So how did you get around that?
How did I deal with it?
Yeah, how did you deal with it?
I guess I just put up a wall, did what I had to do, and got through. What can you do? And then the relationship came to an end. I refused to do anything. So it was a, I ain't frightened of you no more, and you know what? Do what you've got to do, because I ain't doing nothing. But there were some very unhealthy things going on in that relationship. So,
okay, so how did it make you feel, like, I mean, as a person?
The feelings, as in, losing control of what I did or didn't want to do, made me feel like shit, to be honest with you. And I lost total respect for him, to be honest, because it wasn't always...
What about yourself, though?
It wasn't always that way.
What about yourself?
I found it difficult to look in the mirror. Didn't like what I looked at. I became, I don't know, I guess because my expression and my voice had been taken away, I started to emotionally eat. I mean, I was quite a big girl, to be honest with you. I went up to about 195 pounds at one stage, and I looked in the mirror and I didn't like who I was at all. And then, I don't know, I guess my life changed more so as I started to get more and more healthy. I realized that he was extremely unhealthy, or at least unhealthy for me, which didn't fit. I realized more and more that I needed to be away from that relationship. However, it wasn't that easy because, you know, I had a son. I still had to look after my son. And I didn't feel as a mother that I felt as a mother it was my duty to look after my son. So I had no choice. I had to stay until he was an adult, until I believed that he could look after himself. And that's what I had to do. I had no other choice. I had to be strong, because you have to be strong to stay in an unhealthy relationship. People think that you're, you know, people that have never experienced that think that you're weak, that, you know, you're allowing someone to control you, da, 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 da. No, you actually, it's quite the reverse. You have to be absolutely strong, tough as nails, because there's no other way to get through it. There is no other way. So, I mean, essentially from about nine right through to, how old was I? I don't know. Whenever that relationship stopped, 2016, whatever it was, basically lived with abuse for that whole time. So, I'm actually quite proud of myself that I've actually lived through all that crap for all those years, because... You know, even the domestic violence as a little girl, you know, with my parents, I mean, that has a knock-on effect. And people really don't realise that, oh, they might view it like a slap on the ass or a slap across the head or whatever, but in actual fact, just by receiving that domestic violence as a child can actually set us up for later trauma in our lives, hugely. Mm. So, so, yeah, so it's pretty huge.
Mm. I just realized something, folks. I was looking at my program here, and it says it's an invalid date. It's actually, probably because I didn't put it in, that just went, and I think that's what happened. So the actual date is February the 20th. This is not posted on there.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to do that, but I just
that's
took
all right.
Yeah, but it is February the 20th. I'll probably go back and change that. But anyway, so I'm going to bring you back to when you're a child again. Now, being a girl, when you were in school, how hard was it to play with other boys? Let's say if you were in gym and you're doing sports, how was that for you?
Oh, I didn't. Well, when I remember.
Because I know you played sports.
I remember, and this was middle school too, the gym teacher, he was a decent chap actually. However, I had trust issues with the gym teacher, even though he was safe. I had trust issues changing because at the time we were co-ed. Yes, and even in middle school, you had to change in the same classroom as the other children, boys and girls.
Wow.
I had major issues with that. So that was really awkward, like really awkward. Yeah, I remember that quite distinctly.
That didn't happen here in Canada.
No, we had to change in the same room because I guess, I don't know, the teachers probably thought, oh, they're young, they're not, you know, they haven't experienced any of that. But you know what? Some of us had. And, you know, when you look at the numbers, probably quite a few of us had experienced childhood sexual abuse. So that was pretty horrendous, actually. Because, I mean, I was one of those girls that developed quite early on. I think that was probably because of the trauma too, because my period started pretty much fairly soon after the abuse, and I remember that. And I probably see you're not making me remember how old I was now. I was probably in year two only of middle school, because that's when my period started. And I know it was right after. Yeah, that's funny. Any triggers of memory, darling?
Insight, my dear.
Insight.
So, when did you? So I guess that really ever changed. I guess that thought and feelings, even into, well, to when you got married, and those thoughts and feelings are never really changed, did they?
As in. Feeling uncomfortable with my body?
Yeah. No, not uncomfortable with your body, no, but just about being uncomfortable around boys, men, period.
Well, I think I was comfortable because I had two older brothers, so I was comfortable as in speaking to boys, I guess, that I felt I could trust, but it took a while. I was one of those kids that really didn't say very much. I'd sit back and I would watch people, probably for the first three or four times I met them, and really wouldn't say too much. I was one of those people that would sit back, be really quiet and hardly say anything because I'm sort of feeling you out. I'm totally not that person now. If I meet someone, I'm quite forward, I'll shake their hand or introduce myself. I'm not over, like, in your face, but I'll just be polite and then I'll sit back and see if I like your energy. but boys, I remember like going to a disco, I guess, and I remember a girl I'd recently met. She was a bit chubby, but she was very much confident in herself, I guess. And she would say to me, they aren't an alien species, you know. But I'd be like, well, yeah, I'm just a bit, I don't know. I guess I was off standish because I had trust issues, even though I wasn't probably aware of it at the time. definitely trust issues.
Now that you've been dealing with what you deal with, like volunteering, for example, helping other survivors through this process, what is there a common theme that you've heard from other women about their experiences in regards to, you know, how they feel I know that can mean many different things, but is there a common theme of how they felt generally through the whole process of feeling shitty? About themselves or towards
Well, I think trust is a big issue. Well, I mean, some women...
It's better different than women, right?
Yeah,
so that's what I'm talking about.
I think...
Well, what's the big thing that stands out that's different, you think, for women? I guess, I mean, let me rephrase the question. That's why I should have said it in the first place. Is what do you think is the biggest difference? Obviously, we've had some experiences, but it's the gender difference is what I'm getting at. Because women don't think like men do and vice versa. So what do you think is, well, maybe men don't recognize this is what I'm getting at. So what do you think is the biggest feeling you think that you've heard even from other women, not just from what you've done to Gatehouse and other places, but and even on social media, but what do you think is the biggest common theme that men don't understand? There's a different feeling you have.
Well, I don't know if men and women are completely different, to be honest with you, because with the work that I've done in the house for, I don't know, 3 years now?
Yeah, 3 years you've been there now.
What I find is because of societal grooming, I guess, in children in our era, I believe that men or little boys were always told to, you know, little boys don't cry, which is absolute rubbish. So I think the only difference really is that men, we are starting to see a change, but I think that men hide their emotions more. I don't believe that they're not emotional. I believe they hide it more. And that's what I see, because because at the house we encourage people to cry because it's healing. So, you know, we don't hand around a box of tissues to dry those tears. We allow those tears to flow. If they want to get a tissue, they can reach for a tissue themselves. So that's their choice. But I've seen men cry at the house. I've seen women cry at the house. But the only difference really I see when I do a phase one as regards to phase two or run the drop-in or whatever is simply that men feel that they've got to hide all that crap. When if they're more open and emotional, it allows all those feelings to come out of the body and release that trauma from the body, I believe. So that's the only difference I really see, is that, you know, women have been encouraged to be emotional as they were growing up, because little girls are allowed to cry, but the little boys weren't back in the day. Whereas I think we're starting to see that encourage more, that little boys are allowed to show their emotions more now.
Yeah, because we were, well, growing up, I was pretty tight-lipped. But anyway, chin up.
Yeah, exactly. So it's nice when we do start to see that. And even online, you know, we're seeing, you know, when men do some of their videos now, we're seeing men cry. And good on them. I see that as strength. That's not weakness at all. It's actual strength and vulnerability. So I encourage it because it's healing. And, you know, you've got to let, for me, you have to let that crap go. And I know for me, even when I find stuff coming up, that may not be to do with my childhood sexual abuse. It might be to do with something else, like grief or whatever. And if I find myself in that spot, I'll allow those tears to come out. Doesn't mean I'm going to have a crap day because I haven't pushed it down. It means that I have a few moments where I can release that stuff. Once I've released it, I can get on with my day. So I don't have to keep pushing it down because I can let it out and I move on, right? It's that simple, and sometimes it isn't that simple, but one way or the other we get through it, right? Might go for a walk, might, you know, for me I'll do yoga or whatever, but pet a dog if I'm looking after one of the dogs or whatever. But you have to find what works for each individual person, I guess. So
you wouldn't say there's a common theme then?
Personally, I don't think so, because I honestly believe that men are just as emotional as women are. At the end of the day, we're all human beings. Mm. But that's just my perspective. Other people might say totally different, but I don't see it. I've seen men absolutely break down in groups and drop in the phase two, absolutely break down. And I know that the following week when I go back, they've moved hugely. So by letting out all that shit, and I know that's not the greatest word, but by letting all that emotion out, they allow themselves more freedom. And that's beautiful. So, and that's why we keep doing this stuff, isn't it? Essentially.
Probably why we have a closet full of peanuts. Kidding, didn't mean that. No, but to your point, I've seen the same thing too on both sides as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. So all I know is that when we do a phase one group, whether it be, well, I can't say I've ever been part of a woman's phase one group, but in a men's group, that sometimes happens. You need a couple bucks with the Kleenex.
Yeah.
And not just over sexuality either.
No, exactly. It could be whatever part of their journey. Yeah.
So what are some of the things you think that have helped you get to make it through? And obviously you've been at the house and you did a bunch of healing even prior to you coming there, but what are some of the things you did for yourself to kind of get you through it?
Well, I think writing those letters to my abuser, to be honest with you. Because, I mean, I was doing that before I knew writing a letter to the abuser was part of, I don't know, CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy. I was doing that before I'd even thought about a therapist. I think that obviously must have helped me because that was my, you know, you have some of this shit because I ain't taken it all these years. Yeah, I think that was part of it. What else has really helped? Really, I guess, expression. Because once I found my voice, well, as you know, we keep going and, you know, we then allow and hold that space for other survivors to share their voice, knowing what worked for us, because you know, we have to deal with her.
It's not, I'm sure it wasn't easy at some points, wasn't it?
It wasn't easy at all, but definitely worth it. yeah, definitely worth it.
So, well, what else did you do besides the letters you did? What have you done for yourself to try to change that? And I guess in some ways, I just can't make reference to it being homosexuality, but it would be other things that helped you along the way as well, but that might have helped you with the terms of that.
Well, the big jump, like I say, was telling my parents. And again, that was a form of journaling, I guess, because I didn't do it over the telephone initially, but then the second time that I spoke to them after, because they didn't know who it was at the time, I was doing it through like a video call because I was living in a different country. And you know what? My dad did ask some of the right questions. He said, "Are you okay?" And another question, but can't think what it was now. And I just made light of it. Because as a strong person, you kind of do, because I knew that they weren't in a good place. They were worried. And I didn't really have the capacity to heal them as well as heal myself at the time. But then as the conversations started to get deeper, they then realized who it was, and then they were in like complete shock. but yeah, I mean, my brother wasn't my only abuser though, so it went from that, and I was still in middle school, and then I was locked in a shed with a classmate, a a boy that was in high school and someone else on the outside. He locked me in after my friend, or supposed friend, asked if I wanted to look at a bike. So there was that, and then there was a pedophile who was a DJ on a local estate. So it wasn't just the one abuser, so it was... And then I met my unhealthy husband. So it was, it kind of, well, I mean, it does, it wicked, as you know, it wicked age throughout our lives. So lucky for me, I found my freedom when I started to voice, and then I then told people that were close friends with me when I went back to the UK on a trip. And it made a lot of sense to those people because of some of my behavior. And not that it was like completely unhealthy, but I was guarded. I was very guarded. And so when I told people, it just made sense to them. Yeah, so there was that. And that was kind of a little bit of a rebellious thing as well, because when my parents kind of didn't fight for me, and yes, I didn't also fight for them, but when they decided that disconnect, which was pretty mutual, it was a little bit of rebellious in me that I went home when I told people. Because I honestly thought that they brushed it all under the carpet and it was just hidden. But in actual fact, when I went home in 2018 to look after my dad for those few weeks before he died, I realised that in actual fact, they told more people than I'd ever imagined they would, including both my sisters, my nephew. My other brother knew anyway, because he was one of the first people I told. And I believe also people that were close to the family, or who I called an auntie and uncle, but weren't related, but, you know, they were those people that were good people, and so they became like an auntie and uncle. I believe they probably knew too from some of the comments that they'd made to me. So there was that too, which was a little bit of a shocker. And then whilst I was at home, also my other niece and nephew were told whilst I was in the UK in 2018. So I was a little bit annoyed about that, because it wasn't about me, and it wasn't about them knowing about my stuff. It was about my dad dying. It wasn't the time or the place. And so I had to put a couple people in their place and set a boundary and say, this isn't for here, this isn't for now. My dad's dying and I don't want him listening to this. So there was that too. But there's a lot of different stuff that's still going on to this day that you still got to deal with in that whole reconciliation process. And you know what? I believe that the extended family do go into denial, and you see this a lot in the society, and it makes total sense, because they're too close to home. They're too close to the people that are involved in it, especially when it's in the family. Because how can them, like, for instance, a mum try and imagine that their son has done this to their daughter? How can you compute that? Because I mean, we don't get a textbook on raising kids for a start, but then having to deal with a child that has, or an adult child that has come out to you about childhood sexual abuse, and then it's your son that's done it. I can't imagine having to deal with that. So they go into denial because they don't want to believe it. And it's kind of like having cancer, isn't it? You go into denial because you can't deal with it, right? So I believe that's what happens with childhood sexual abuse, and you see it so many times. All the people that have shared all this stuff online.
We've talked to thousands and thousands of people over the years.
And they say, my mum, I don't speak to her anymore, da, 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 da. The story is so similar. My dad doesn't speak to me because I shared that my mum did this, or my mum doesn't speak to me because I shared that my dad did this, da, 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 da. And it's because I believe, and even the psychologists say, you know, you read these different things because we don't want to believe that this person that everyone's got to know in the community, they think, is a really good bloke or a really lovely woman, da, 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 da. But they don't also realise that there's that grooming process. So these people might come across as really kind, hearted, decent people. But, you know, they've had to get into the family or be part of the family. And in order to get a child to do these things, they have to kind of groom you and trick you to make you think that this is a good thing that you're doing, which is wrong. And so, you know, people think, oh yeah, Fred up the road, he's such a great bloke. But in actual fact, they don't, when they find out that, you know, Fred Bloggs up the road is a sexual abuser, they don't want to believe it because they go into denial. So it makes total sense to me. And that's what happened with my family. They did not want to believe it. But in actual fact, when I shared with my mum more recently, because I wanted to tell her about my pedophile, she already knew. So that was not a surprise to her at all. But yeah. So that was interesting.
Fair enough.
Yeah, thank you.
So, what would you tell somebody now that's actually dealing with their sexuality in a sense that when they're feeling, they don't feel so great about it, or they're confused about their sexuality, meaning, well, I don't trust men and I don't trust women, and I'm not sure what my identity is or who I want to be with.
Well, they don't know if they're gay.
Or straight, exactly.
Or lesbian, yeah. Or whatever.
Yeah. What would you tell that person?
Well, it's got to be up to them, isn't it?
Well, obviously, yes.
I wouldn't tell them anything, to be honest with you. It's got to be their choice. I don't know.
Just hypothetically.
Well, I'm not really one to encourage promiscuity, and if that's what your bag is, and that's good, but I don't really know what I would say. It would depend on the conversation, I guess.
So I'm just trying to put
it. But it's got to be their choice. It's got to be their choice. Yeah. And if they ask me for advice, I wouldn't give them advice. I've got to say, well, yep, it's got to be what works for you. Because everyone's so different. I can't tell them what to do.
No, it's not so much I was looking for you so much to say to tell them what to do, but. You know, if they're just if they're just struggling, and you know, and
well, I think personally, I would maybe suggest, and it's only a suggestion, maybe they need to explore their own bodies.
Thank you. That's what I was looking for. And this is a big thing that it's. I mean, obviously. For intimacy, like with your partner, for male and female, it's very, very important. But, you know, if you're unsure of your sexuality, what you like and what you don't like, well, then it's like with whether it's a straight or gay, it makes a difference. You need to experiment and figure these things out. And if it means, well, looking at, you know, magazines as an example of the same gender to figure that out to see if that's your thing, I'm using that as an example. To figure that out. And there's other things you can do is here in Canada, for example, now we have gay lines, for example, gay hotlines that you can call, and they'll support you through this process. Whether you're gay or lesbian or non-binary now, as we need to recognize all different types of sexuality or genders, I should say. And but there's help here in the Greater Toronto Area for people with that are having this issue with their sexuality, as for example. And they can help you through that process, right? Which is really, really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as there is help for us as well. If you're heterosexual, then there's help for us as well. As I put this reference of Caleb and Roll on, I know she deals with sexuality to a greater extent. And there's other therapists in the city that do the same thing. But there is help out there, depending where you are, but I'm only giving you an example here. But Nicholas said the right word, and that is you need to explore,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm.
And in order to figure that out, then you can go from there. And then the question is not about judgment or trying to tell you what to do, but other than to, you know, here's an avenue you can go if you're trying to figure that out now. And again, like Nicola also said too, which is very important, it has to be your choice.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be what we say or what you think you hear or don't hear, because we're not telling you to do anything of the sort. It has to be your choice. But understanding what you like is really what we're talking about here now. It's about trying to figure out, well, what do I prefer, boys or girls? What do I want, right?
Well, I must admit, at one point I thought I was maybe lesbian, but I think that's probably because I had major trust issues with men.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't because I was lesbian, because I never did anything.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that that's wrong, because it's totally okay as far as I'm concerned, but I think it comes to dealing with my stuff. And I guess, you know, everyone's different, right? So just what is. But I'm definitely heterosexual, that's for sure. But yeah, there's definitely one point where I was confused as to what I was. But again, it was major trust issues because, you know, I had a female doctor, I had a female hairdresser, I had a female dentist, I had a female everything because I did not trust men at all. And then slowly I started to get a male hairdresser, which happened by accident through a recommendation. Having moved to a fairly new town, and then the only recommendation that I did get was a male hairdresser, so I allowed that to happen. And then slowly, gradually, I mean, even this year, as you know, I've been to see a male doctor, and it's just like, how on earth did I ever get to that stage? And I felt trust, and it was like, wow, I really have come a long way. 20 odd years ago, I've never even thought I would get to that space. But yeah, it's a long process, right? And each year, something else comes up, and I'm like, oh wow, I can trust those people now, or you know, it's different, right? So it's interesting too.
Oh,
when you have these realizations, it's like, wow. Yeah. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there you go, folks. Here has been two. Well, actually, mainly one perspective, because I wanted to be about women tonight, and so you understand, you know. Well, just so you understand that there's a big difference, right? I mean, obviously because of our sexes, but
yeah.
I mean, our emotions matter. Yes, as you pointed out earlier. Yes, they're very, very similar, but there's a lot I still say are very, very different in how we think and how we feel, right?
Yeah, potentially.
And
I think men generally have less words, but the emotions are still there, I believe. Because, you know, when you're in a room for 16 weeks with the same men and women over and over and over again, the energy feels the same as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, when you see men getting emotional, it is totally how women get. However, like we say now, society pushes that down with men more so than they do with women. It's unfair, but in my opinion, that's the truth.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, we've had Nicola here tonight. Part two of sexuality. Hope you got some good insight out on it, but I would really recommend you go to KellyMonroe.com, and she talks more about it and about sexuality, that is. And, you know, could be a great help for you if you're struggling with this issue right now, and maybe you've never dealt with this issue before. And it would be a good place to start. And if you're on social media, you can find me as the Unforgiven, or Unforgiven Warrior, that is, that's Got to Get Out Of. I got to get out of the Unforgiven Warrior. Stuart is my real name. And I have Nicola here beside me, living with abuse.
Thank you. Indeed.
And do you want to give out your Facebook handle or not?
No, I don't use Facebook.
Oh, that's right. You don't use Facebook. I don't use it either, but folks, I just thought I'd throw that out there. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
And it's kind of late. It's Thursday. I always do this on Thursday. But
it's almost 10 o'clock. We've done it later than we normally do.
Well, folks, take some self-care. I've had some good shows coming up. We have some good things coming up too as well. Both of us are pretty busy next little while.
Yeah, we are.
Oh,
and I also have a group coming up in April, the memoir workshop. Yeah, that's a 6-week program at the house as well. But yeah, so that's going to be on a Tuesday during the day. So that'd be nice. So we keep going, don't we? That's the thing. If this conversation has brought up any realizations, or what some people like to call triggers, I call them realizations, but some people like to call them triggers or whatever, insights. Please do take some good self-care. And if, like you've said before, if you need to stop listening, then please go take care of yourself. So if you're in that space, there are also the helplines on the Gatehouse website that you can call.
If you're in the local Greater Toronto area.
Exactly.
In other words, we don't have a bunch of them posted in front of us if you're listening.
Yeah.
Have been listening to us from over in Europe, over the UK, Asia, Australia. you saw my listening audience. I have, which I'm ever grateful for, but it's from all over the world.
Oh, yeah.
You got to love the internet. Holy mackerel. If I was to run a radio, I just have one city, but this is the whole world.
The good thing is there's a lot of support out there now. So, like, there's a suicide intervention, there's all these social networking sites where, you know, you can basically talk to somebody. So if you're in that space and, you know, you want to give up, then I encourage you to reach out to someone, because there's always someone out there that will give you just that little helping hand and enlighten you that little bit more. And remember, you know, who you love, who you're connected with, because, you know, that's who's going to pull you through from that dark side. So, anyway.
Yeah, I meant to mention too. Yeah, I'm just about to finish a men's group as well. So I just did week 13. I have 2 weeks left. So I'm done with the men's group as well. And thanks again, Nifa, for coming on.
My pleasure.
And hopefully we'll get you back again.
Indeed.
Because we have lots more stuff to talk about in regards to our healing process and resources out there, different things, but basically really to support you out there as well as supporting ourselves. Folks, I'm going to wish you a great weekend ahead. And, for some February, the days are getting longer, if you haven't noticed already. I was just saying to Nicola this morning when I was driving to Niagara Falls that it was daylight by 7 o'clock. 7 a.m. in the morning, which is nice because it hasn't been daylight at 7 a.m. for a few months.
Yeah.
And obviously the evening's getting longer, so it's kind of nice to, and I was able to see the sun come up.
Yeah, it was a beautiful sunny day today, actually, wasn't it? It's a little bit cold, but I mean, I wrap up, I'm looking after this dog right now, walked out in the brilliant sunshine. It was beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
When I left this morning, it was like minus 15 to minus 20, something like that.
Yeah, it was only about minus 8, minus 10 when I went out for the walk for this.
But at 5 a.m. it wasn't.
No.
I left at 5 a.m. this morning, and that's how cold it was. Tonight's going to be really, really cold. But anyway, enough of our cold stories. Folks, find something warm.
But making you shiver. Ooh.
Stay warm, have a good weekend, and we'll be back. Thank you.
Take care. Thank you. Good night.